Blog Talk Radio.
You've heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along. Designed black convertible top, and the gals don't mind going with me riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, Raymond, blow. In my rocket and don't be late, baby, we're pulling out about half past eight. Going round the corner and get a feel. Everybody in my car's gonna take a little nip. Move on out, oozing and cruising along.
Okay.
Well,
acquittal. How about that? Not much of a surprise. A lot of frou-frou, a lot of rhubarb, a lot of falderol, a lot of cash blown out, a lot of bloviating, a lot of intellectual flatulence, a lot of dishonesty, a lot of hypocrisy. And at the end of all those lattas, the man was not guilty. He was never guilty. And they could not have found him guilty for all the reasons that we've gone into here over the last couple of weeks that they, you know, we've been talking about this crap. So there are those of you who probably think that this is the end of it. Okay? They've impeached the dude twice. They can't crack him. They can't do anything with it. They can't win. He had a pretty good defense team, and I've heard things in the news. I haven't really looked at it that closely, because to be honest with you, as far as the impeachment goes, really, honest and truth. Bright, for giving a good example of what a yawn festival this was. Did I watch it? Yeah. I watched highlight film, if I guess you could say. I watched the highlight reels. And I watched what I needed to watch to break down whatever facet of that particular jewel was that I was talking about at any given time. But no, I didn't. And Breitbart took a survey. And Breitbart is the fifth largest news aggregate site. It's the fifth largest hit site in the galaxy. It's huge. And they did a survey of just, you know, like exclusive Breitbart visitors, Breitbart members, hits, whatever. 96% of them said, no, I'm not watching that. No. And, you know, at this stage in the game, I don't think we really need to watch it. What we need to look at, because there's nothing there, but what we need to look at are the people who have revealed themselves to this point. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about all these people that for 4 years worked in the Trump administration. He's a great guy. It's a good place. He's a visionary. We're proud of the job we're doing for the country. You know, be true to your school. The minute they get out, he's a bastard. He's a racist. I can't stand the guy. Hope he dies. He's terrible. He's this, he's that. You know, they bring out their knives. Well, cynically, that's understandable because these cats, you know, they got to make a living after this is all over with. And in order to do that, they're going to have to curry favor with a lot of people who don't like Donald Trump. And this is how they prostitute themselves. And I don't think, and there were a number of people who spoke in the president's behalf and you know, as part of this whole deal. And there were a lot of legitimate, well, somebody, I think it was, I can't remember, it was maybe Ted Cruz or maybe Rand Paul. I can't remember. One of them wanted to ask, well, will you guys reopen the XL pipeline if we put Hunter Biden on the board? They didn't ask that, but I would be curious as to what they would say. Okay, all right. Well, but there were, and it's easy nowadays. It's just so easy. Yeah, it is. It's so easy. So doggone easy. Little buddy Holly for you there. He to spot the hypocrisy of these people is an easy thing these days. It has been for a long time. And now that they don't even care. I mean, there's no pretense anymore. There's no pretense with Don Lemon. I know you're supposed to say it Lamont, which I guess is how they say that in LGBT circles. But anyway, Don Lemon, is it Anderson Cooper? I don't know. Anyway, any of these guys, any of these people, you know, there's no pretense. Not any longer. They're all in the tank. But at the same time, they want to look at you with a straight face and tell you that you can trust what they say because they are objective and impartial. The Stephanopoulos, he's a great case in point. That dude has been a Clinton flack since there's been Clintons, coming up on 30-some years. And he has spent like 20-some of it at ABC under the guise as an objective and impartial journalist. He's a hack, for the love of God. He's a left-wing he's a shill for the Clintons, first and foremost, and always will be, no matter what. But he's also a left-wing shill. And he looks in the camera, and he'll try to, and he got in a great knockdown. I wish I had it. I might be able to find it, and we'll get to it at some point, either on this, well, not tonight, but one of the Tuesday or Thursday shows. I'll grab it up. It was Rand Paul. They get into it. And Rand Paul laid him out on it and walked out of it with Stephanopoulos not even laying a glove on it. And he was absolutely right in what he did. And basically, he just called Stephanopoulos out on his being a shill. And they're all shills. Okay? Maddow, shill. Stephanopoulos, ooh, shill. Kasich, shill. Brzezinski, shill. Lawrence O'Donnell, shill. Pick a name. Pick a CNN name. Pick an ABC name. Pick a CBS name. Pick an NBC name. Pick a PBS public television name. Shill. Okay. But they want you to believe, you know, they want us to believe, they would have us believe that they're giving us the straight dope, that they're giving us the inside scoop. And it's a lie. They're not. They're giving us their spin. I am not a journalist. I am not a reporter. I leave that to the Lois Lanes and the Jimmy Olsons. I am a commentator. I take a look at the reportage, as Ricky Ricardo would say, and I coalesce that vapor into whatever it is I imagine myself seeing based on my experience and background. These guys want you to believe that they're really reporters, and they're not. The same way that Democrats would imagine that we would trust Michael Leahy, President Pro Tem of the Senate, President Pro Tem of the Senate, Leahy, I think it's Michael. It's not Patrick, the old man, because I think he's dead. Anyway, the President Pro Tem of the Senate, a Democrat, staunch Trump critic, vocal impeachment supporter, one and two, and allow him to be the judge of this proceeding. And not to worry, because he's going to be honest and impartial. We're good. He's a stand-up guy. We don't have to worry about it. We know the president's going to get a fair deal. Isn't that right, Mitt? Isn't that right, Ben? Isn't that right, Lisa? Yeah, there was a lot of hypocrisy. David Schoen did an excellent job of talking about it. Here's the first one. I think this was from day two. Fundamental. I played this earlier in the week. He points out the hypocrisy better. Well, everybody does it. You and I do it. We all do it. We've seen it. But he does a terrific job of pointing out the hypocrisy directly to the hypocrites in the room. I bet there was a lot of squirming that when he, anyway, here it is.
These aren't just niceties. I make no apology for demanding in your name, in the name of the Constitution, that the rights to due process guaranteed under the Constitution are adhered to in a process as serious as this in our national lives. The denial of due process in this case, of course, starts with the House of Representatives. In this unprecedented snap impeachment process, the House of Representatives denied every attribute of fundamental constitutional due process that Americans correctly have come to believe is part of what makes this country so great. How and why did that happen? It is a function of the insatiable lust for impeachment in the House for the past 4 years. Consider this.
I want to say this for Donald Trump, who I may well be voting to impeach.
Donald Trump has already done a number of things which legitimately raise the question of impeachment.
I don't respect this president, and I will fight every day until he is impeached.
That is grounds to start impeachment proceedings. Those are grounds to start impeachment. Those are grounds to start impeachment proceedings. Yes, I think that's grounds to start impeachment proceedings.
I rise today, Mr. Speaker, to call for the impeachment of the President of the United States of America.
I continue to say, impeach him! Impeach 45! Impeach 45!
So we're calling upon the House to begin impeachment hearings immediately.
On the impeachment, Donald Trump, would you vote yes or no?
I would vote yes. I would vote to impeach.
Because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
But the fact is, I introduced articles of impeachment in July of 2017.
We don't impeach this president. He will get reelected.
My oath requires me to be for impeachment, have an impeachment hearing, and he's the scarlet eye on his chest.
The representative should begin impeachment proceedings against this president.
It is time to bring impeachment charges against him. Bring impeachment charges.
My personal view is that he richly deserves impeachment.
I'm here at an impeachment rally, and we are ready to impeach the...
The relevant timeline in the House reveals the rush to judgment. On the day following the January 6th riot, the House leadership cynically sensed a political opportunity to score points against the outgoing then-President Trump. And the Speaker demanded that Vice President Pence invoke the 25th Amendment, threatening immediate impeachment for the president if Mr. Pence did not comply with this extraordinary and extraordinarily wrong demand. 4 days later, on January 11th, 2021, the instant article of impeachment was introduced in the House. Speaker Pelosi then gave the Vice President another ultimatum, threatening to begin impeachment proceedings within 24 hours if he did not comply. Vice President Pence rejected Speaker Pelosi's demand, favoring instead adherence to the Constitution and the best interests of the nation over a politically motivated threat. On January 12th, Speaker Pelosi announced who the 9 impeachment managers would be. And on January 13th, 2021, just days after holding a press conference to announce the launching of an inquiry, the House adopted the article of impeachment, completing the fastest impeachment inquiry in history and according President Trump, no due process at all, over strong opposition based in large part on the complete lack of due process. To say there was a rush to judgment by the House would be a grave understatement. It is not as if the House members who voted to impeach were not mightily warned about the dangers to the institution of the presidency and about our system and to our system of due process. They were warned in the strongest of terms from within their own ranks, adamantly, clearly, and in no uncertain terms, not to take this dangerous snap impeachment course. Those warnings were framed in the context of the constitutional due process that was denied here. Consider the warnings given by one member during the House proceedings, pleading with the other members to accord this decision the due process the Constitution demands. This is Representative Cole of Oklahoma. With only 1 week to go in his term, the majority is asking us to consider a resolution impeaching President Trump. And they do so knowing full well that even if the House passes the resolution, the Senate will not be able to begin considering these charges until after President Trump's term ends. I can think of no action the House can take that is more likely to further divide the American people than the action we are contemplating today.
And the thing is, and again, we're talking hypocrisy, because what are Democrats talking about while they were boiling the rope and building the gibbet for this president? They were talking about healing. They were talking about unity. You remember what Bruce Springsteen was talking about? He's talking about healing, talking about unity, talking about how you shouldn't drink and drive, because if you hit a pothole, you'll send that crap everywhere, man. It's a mess. Should have followed his own advice. So they say healing, they say unity, they mean conformity. Just like Islam, they mean submission. Excuse me. And again, you know, we see the hypocrisy very clearly in media, and we see it in Washington, D.C. more and more all the time. And on the day after the, I think this is Schoen again, David Schoen again, one of the president's lawyers. The Democrats sent in doctored up evidence. They ponied up evidence. They falsified. They tampered with evidence. They selectively edited the president's speech when he was talking to the crowd that day in Washington, D.C. They took the peacefully out. They edited it. They cheated. And they did the same thing with, well, here, Schoen will tell you about this again, exposing more of the hypocrisy and the deception, the out-and-out deception.
And it turns out
these cheating
there is
Democrat
significant SOBs. Reason to doubt the evidence the House managers have put before us. Let me say this clearly. We have reason to believe the House managers manipulated evidence and selectively edited footage. If they did, and this were a court of law, they would face sanctions from the judge. I don't raise this issue lightly. Rather, it is a product of what we have found in just the limited time we have had since we first saw the evidence here with you this week. We have reason to believe that the House managers created false representations of tweets, and the lack of due process means there was no opportunity to review or verify the accuracy.
No trial discovery.
The House managers, proud of their work on the snap impeachment, staged numerous photo shoots of their preparations. In one of those, Manager Raskin is seen here at his desk reviewing two tweets side by side. The image on his screen claims to show that President Trump had retweeted one of those tweets. Now, members of the Senate, let's look closely at this screen, because obviously Manager Raskin considered it important enough that he invited the New York Times to watch him watching it. Now, what's wrong with this image? Actually, there are three things very wrong with it. Look at the date on the very bottom of the screen on Manager Raskin's computer screen when we zoom in to the picture. The date that appears is January 3rd, 2020, not 2021. Why is that date wrong? Because this is not a real screenshot that he's working with. This is a recreation of a tweet, and you got the date wrong when you manufactured this graphic. You did not disclose that this is a manufactured graphic and not a real screenshot of a tweet. Now, to be fair, the House managers caught this error before showing the image on the Senate floor, so you never saw it when it was presented to you. But that's not all. They didn't fix this one. Look at the blue check mark next to the Twitter username of the account retweeted by the president. It indicates that this is a verified account, given the blue check by Twitter to indicate it is run by a public figure. The problem? The user's real account is not verified and has no blue check mark, as you can see. Were you trying to make her account seem more significant, or were you just sloppy? If we had due process of law in this case, we would know the truth. But that's not all that's wrong with this one tweet. House Manager Swalwell showed you this tweet this week, and he emphasized that this tweet reflected a call to arms. He
bang,
told you repeatedly
bang,
that this
bang,
was a promise to call in the cavalry for January 6th. He expressly led you to believe that President Trump's supporter believed that the president wanted armed supporters at the January 6th speech, paramilitary groups, the cavalry, ready for physical combat. The problem is, the actual text is exactly the opposite. The tweeter promised to bring the Calvary, a public display of Christ's crucifixion, a central symbol of her Christian faith, with her to the president's speech. A symbol of faith, love, and peace.
Not the
They just
cavalry,
never want to seem to
idiot.
Read the text and believe what the text means. You'll see this reported in the media last evening also. Words matter, they told you.
The U.S.
But they
cavalry.
Selectively edited the president's words over and over again. They manipulated video, time-shifting clips, and made it appear the president's words were playing to a crowd when they weren't. Let's take a look.
After this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down. We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Anyone you want,
but I'm right here. We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong. We have come to demand that Congress do the right thing and only count the electors who have been lawfully slated. Lawfully slated. I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard.
And we are going to walk down to the Capitol. They showed you that part. Why are we walking to the Capitol? Well, they cut that off.
They sure did. Why did they cut that off? Well, if they left it on, it makes it pretty damn tough for these guys, not that they were going to any, but to prove their case. Which they were never going to do. They just weren't. They didn't have it. But this is not the end of it. This is not going to be the end of it. They're not going to be satisfied with this. They're gonna rail for a little while, and they're going to be really upset. And they're going to gnash their teeth, and they're gonna rent their garments and all that kind of stuff, and then they're going to be ready to try something else. There's been a lot of talk about what they were going to be doing next, and what that had to do with was the 14th Amendment. Yeah, we got time. Now, there are about five sections to the 14th Amendment, and here's the deal. The first section talks about the fact that all people who are born or naturalized in the United States and are subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and wherever state they happen to be living in. And no state can make or enforce any law which abridges the privileges or the immunities offered as a citizen of the United States. And then the second section, they talk about representatives and how they should be apportioned out to each of the states. And they talk about Section 3. And Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is what they're looking at. Section 3, Section 4. And I'm going to read those word for word. Here's what it says. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of the president, vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, if they shall have engaged in what? Insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid and comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may vote by a 2/3 of each house to remove such a disability. So what they're saying here is if you have engaged in insurrection and rebellion against the United States government, you're not eligible to hold office unless two-thirds of the Senate and 2/3 of the House both vote in favor of exempting you from that. Now, what this has to do with is the Civil War. There were a lot of folks in politics. There were a lot of Southerners in Washington, D.C., that when the South began to secede, as their states seceded from the Union, their representation in Washington, you know, their presence in Washington was no longer necessary. They were no longer a part of that government. So they returned home to private life, to raise regiments, fight for their independence. And I would submit that that's probably one of the reasons they've been using the word insurrection. They've been bandying that word about this whole time. Insurrection, armed insurrection, insurrection, invasion of the Capitol, blah, 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 blah. Okay, they don't talk about the insurrection that took place in Portland. They don't talk about the insurrection that took place in Seattle, in Los Angeles, in Philadelphia, in Atlanta, in Richmond, in St. Louis, in Phoenix, in Colorado, in Denver, or any other Democrat-controlled enclave in this country, Chicago, Detroit, New York. They didn't talk about any, they didn't mention any of the insurrections, the armed insurrections that took place across the country over the summer. Not once. But we're going to talk about this insurrection, which was no insurrection at all. It was a Reichstag fire. And I think the next attempt will have to do with trying to engage that particular section of the 14th Amendment to try to prevent Donald Trump from running for office again. See, as it stands now, there's no consequences. There's nothing they can do. He can run for public office. There's nothing to preclude Donald Trump from running 2024 beyond his health. He's 72 now, I think. 73, 70, maybe 74. He'll be 76. He'll still be younger than Joe Biden. And, you know, all things being equal, if his mental faculties and his physical, you know, stamina are up to the job, why not? It's a pretty safe bet. He's got more on the ball than Joe Biden right now. And in 2 years from now, I guarantee you, he will still have more on the ball than Joe Biden, if Joe Biden's even around. So none of these things that they've wanted to do, and you heard in the first clip there, you know, he has to be convicted, because if we don't convict him, he'll run again. And if he runs again, what? He'll win. Yes. In all likelihood, he will win. Seven senators voted to convict the president. Richard Burr, a Republican from North Carolina. Bill Cassidy, a Republican from Louisiana. Susan Collins, Republican from Maine. Ben Sasse from New Mexico, I think. Nevada. And Mitt Romney, of course, Utah. Lisa Murkowski, Alaska. Pat Toomey, Pennsylvania. Toomey's compromised. He's already said he's not going to be running. He's not up for election, I think, for two more years. I don't think his carries over in the midterms, but he's done. He's bowing out. So hopefully somebody more reliable will step into that void there. Richard Burr as well. Neither one of those will be running for re-election in 2022. Were we to accentuate the positive, no, we're going to have to go through four pretty rugged years with Biden and Harris at the wheel, and there's no way around it. But what's happened is that we have seen a lot of Republicans, a lot of people who say they're conservative and advocate for conservative interests, really probably aren't. They're certainly not holding the best interests of about 75 million people that we can think of, maybe as many as 85. My friend Don Ewan puts that estimate at about 90, and he knows a lot more about this than I do, but I'll say easily 75 to 80 million people. They're not looking out for these people's interests, our interests. So what do we do with this? Is it really? I mean, there was no crime committed. There was no laws broken. The Democrats couldn't provide evidence of anything beyond what they could manufacture. This is a constitutional mechanism designed to remove politicians actively sitting in office. This former president had been removed by about a month. And yet the Democrats insisted. By God, they did. I got to get something to drink. All this talking makes a man thirsty. We will be back with more of a conservative's perspective here as soon as I scroll down and find something to listen to. We'll be back right after this.
How y'all doing? My name's Dewey Cox. Well, it looks like I got some proving myself to do. Sam?
Walk hard, hard down life's rocky road. Walk bold, hard, that's my creed, my code. I've been scorned and slandered and ridiculed too. Had to struggle every day my whole life through. Share all the worst that this world can give, but I still got a dream and a burning rage to live. Walk hard, hard, when they say you're all done. Walk bold, hard, though they say you're not the one. Even if you've been told time and time again that you're always gonna lose and you're never gonna win, you gotta keep that vision in your mind's eye when you're standing on top of a mountain high. Folks used to say to me, slow down, Dewey. Don't walk so hard. And I used to tell them, life's a race, and I'm in it to win it. And I walk as damn hard as I please. How do I walk, boys? My dying day, gonna look him in the eye, and by God I'll say, I gave my word and my word was good. I took it in the face and I walked as hard as I could. Walk hard, walk hard, walk hard.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I approach the bench? I don't give a damn what anyone thinks. I stay up all night and I smoke and I drink. I'm a wanted man and I'm blowing town. Don't waste your time trying to hunt me down. The cops are saying I belong behind bars, and I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. I ain't never lost a fight in my life. I'll send you home crying to your fat and ugly wife. If you don't believe me when I tell you this, well, let me introduce you to my rock hard friend. If you're accusing me of living too hard, well, I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. I ain't asking God to forgive my sins. Take a good look and you'll know where I've been. I I'm dancing with the devil every night and every day. So pay attention to the things that I say.
Hey.
I don't need anybody's help to rise above it. If you don't like the way I'm living, buddy, why don't you shut it? When you feel the ground shaking underneath your feet, oh, that's yours truly walking down the street. Come a little closer, girl, I'll show you my scars. And I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. If you're saying my love is too large, I'm guilty as charged. Oh, I'm guilty. I'm guilty as charged. You got me. I'm guilty as
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I love that. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you're at, man. I love that. I remember seeing that as a kid, 15 years old, in the movie. It's a story by Patty Chayefsky called Network. And there's a lot of great actors in it. Peter Finch playing Howard Beale. William Holden, Faye Dunaway. Lots of name actors all throughout it. And it's a terrific movie. And what he says there in that script, which was in its way a commentary of the times, and that was 1976, 1977. I was a wee little nipper. I was in junior high school. I remember seeing this picture on HBO. I thought, wow. And it was a very cynical look at network television and the media in general. And it was a pretty accurate portrayal of it. By 1977 standards, you could see everything that we see today. And we got to get mad. True, you know, we may not have solutions to these problems, but we got to get pissed off about it first. We've got to get mobilized. We have to get mad. And you know what? You are a human being. Really bad word that I like to say and really shouldn't, because it's like the worst one that when he said, but it just rolls off the tongue when I'm angry so beautifully. I have to watch it. But you are a human being. Your life does have value. And these people act like it doesn't. And we're going to move on from the impeachment. We're going to talk about somebody who definitely doesn't think your life or anyone's life, for that matter, has value beyond his own. What I'm going to share with you is a communique that comes from the New York Department of Health. Dr. Howard Zucker, who is not only an MD, he also has a doctorate in jurisprudence. So Dr. Lawyer Howard Zucker, Sally Dreslin, Executive Deputy Commissioner, Master of Science, Registered Nurse, and that murderous son of a bitch, the Honorable Governor Nipples Cuomo. It is dated March 25th, 2020. It is to nursing home administrators, directors of nursing, and hospital discharge planners. It is from the New York State Department of Health. And I'm going to read it to you word for word. In bold letters, advisory. Hospital discharges and admissions to nursing homes. Please distribute immediately to nursing home administrators, directors of nursing, directors of social work, hospital discharge planners. COVID-19 has been detected in multiple communities throughout New York State. There is an urgent need to expand hospital capacity in New York State to be able to meet the demand for patients with COVID-19 requiring actual care. Now, as a result, this directive is being issued to clarify expectations for nursing homes receiving residents returning from hospitalization and for nursing homes accepting new admissions. Hospital discharge planning staff and nursing homes should carefully review this guidance with all staff directly involved in resident admission, transfer, and discharges. During this global health emergency, all nursing homes must comply with the expedited receipt of residents returning from hospitals to nursing homes. Residents are deemed appropriate for return to the nursing home upon determination by the hospital physician or designee that the resident is medically stable to return. Hospital discharge planners must confirm to the nursing home by telephone that the resident is medically stable for discharge. Comprehensive discharge instructions must be provided by the hospital prior to transport to a nursing home. Now, having said all that, which was a lot of blah, 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 yakety schmackety, but you guys are not stupid. You understand where they're going with this. No resident, and they're going right here, no resident shall be denied readmission or admission to the nursing home solely based on a confirmed or suspected diagnosis of COVID-19. Nursing homes are prohibited from requiring a hospitalized resident who is determined medically stable to be tested for COVID-19 prior to admission of readmission. Let me read that again. Nursing homes are prohibited. That means you can't do it for those of you in San Francisco. Nursing homes are prohibited from requiring a hospitalized resident who is determined medically stable to be tested for COVID-19 prior to admission or readmission. So you're not allowed to ask. You're not allowed to test. You're not allowed to ask if you can test. Don't ask, don't tell. We've got to take them back. We're mandated to take them back. As a result, it says in the first paragraph, as a result, this directive, not recommendation, not suggestion, directive. But you got to do it. If you don't do it, we find out about it. We're going to make life tough for you. We're going to put your nursing home out of business. We're going to crush it. March 25th, 2020. This was the directive that Governor Cuomo and the New York Department of Health Commissioner, doctor, lawyer, quite possibly Indian chief, Howard Zucker, and Sally Dreslin, registered nurse, and also ran, pushed. This is it. You're going to do it. Nursing homes didn't have any choice. The nursing homes weren't given PPE. A lot of these people who work in nursing homes oftentimes, and let me tell you something here, folks. Nursing home people rock. CNAs, custodians, housekeeping, they rock. Nurses rock. It's a tough job. I was in the nursing home business, Rob, but I had a cake job. I was an activities director. And you know, we didn't do much. We had a lot of fun. All those other folks, you know, especially in the nursing end and the housekeeping end, the CNAs, they were invariably doing something to these people. You know, they're dressing them, they're feeding them, they're treating them, they're, you know, whatever, they're handling them. I used to do stuff with and for them. So I enjoyed that tremendously. But it's a tough, back-breaking, thankless job. And it takes a remarkably special, caring, patient, a hard-working person to do it. And not every CNA housekeeper is that patient, caring, hardworking person. A lot of them are. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. And God bless them. But they usually work in more than one facility, is the point I'm trying to get at. And without the proper PPE and their carrying, guess what? These places turned into hotbeds. Now, I want you to keep in mind what I just shared with you. And I'm going to play some clips. I got a few of them here. Got a few of them from Mario Cuomo. We're going to play, I'm not exactly sure what order they're in, but I'm going to play this one first. It's a 5-minute clip. And I'm not even sure what it is, but let's just check it out. And keep in mind, again, this was a directive that the governor and his state board of health director mandated nursing homes do. They could not test in folks that were coming back from the hospital for corona. They couldn't even ask anything about corona. You couldn't assess it.
Hello. Today is Monday, day 170. New Yorkers were ground zero for the COVID virus and have gone from one of the highest infection rates on the globe to one of the lowest. We climbed the impossible mountain, and right now we are on the other side. We did it with the kindness and assistance of so many. New Yorkers want to thank everyone who came to our aid, 30,000 Americans who volunteered to come here to help in our hour of need.
You ran them out of town.
Your love gave us the strength to carry on.
You didn't thank the president. He sent everything he
could. We went through hell, but we have learned much.
Yes,
we know that our problems go beyond the COVID virus. COVID is the symptom,
they go to the governor's,
not the illness. Our nation is in crisis. And in many ways, COVID is just a metaphor. A virus attacks when the body is weak and when it cannot defend
like
itself.
Liberalism or communism.
Over
or
these
socialism.
Past few years, America's body politic has been weakened. The divisions have been growing deeper. The anti-Semitism, the anti-Latino, the anti-immigrant fervor, the racism in Charlottesville, where the KKK didn't even bother to wear their hoods, and in Minnesota, where the life was squeezed from Mr. Floyd. Only a strong body can fight off the virus, and America's divisions weakened it. Donald Trump didn't create the initial division. The division created Trump. He only made it worse.
Oh, my God.
Our collective strength is exercised through government. It is, in effect, our immune system. And our current federal government is dysfunctional and incompetent. It couldn't fight off the virus. In fact, it didn't even see it coming. The European virus infected the Northeast while the White House was still fixated on China. The virus had been attacking us for months before they even knew it was here.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean
we saw the failure of a government that tried to deny the virus, then tried to ignore it, and then tried to politicize it.
I got it.
The failed federal government that watched New York get ambushed by their negligence and then watched New York suffer, but all through it learned absolutely nothing.
Of course.
So today, 6 months after it began, the nation is still unprepared. And we now face a second threat, but this time not from Mother Nature. This is a man-made threat by our own negligence.
Yeah.
We now see the virus ricocheting across the country.
I'm walking here.
From one state to another. Okay. Today, we trail the world in defeating COVID. We have over 5 million cases.
But you lead the league.
Americans learned the critical lesson. How vulnerable we are when we are divided. And how many lives can be lost when our government is incompetent.
Pretty vulnerable there.
But we learned something else, my friends. We saw the negative, but we also saw the positive.
Really?
As they proved their way failed, we proved that our way succeeded. That America can still rise to the occasion. We can put our differences aside and find commonality. Government can tell the truth and can build trust. We can judge by content of character rather than color of skin. We can care for one another. That Americans can work together and forge community. And a competent government. That, of course, we will wear masks.
Cuomo talking about a cooperative government.
And because I care about you and because you care about me.
No.
Of course, we will
socially
distance.
I do not care about you. You do not care about me.
Because staying away shows how close we actually are.
No.
Yes, we will set up testing and tracing and do whatever we need to do to mobilize to win this battle because we are America. We win wars. And we are the greatest country on the globe. And for all the pain and all the tears, our way worked. And it was beautiful. We showed that our better angels are strong and that Americans will rise to their call.
Speaking
kind of fashion. We saw that even at the end of the day, even if it is a long day, that love wins.
Oh, God. Yeah, this is just too long. I thought we could. That wasn't even 5 minutes, and I'm about ready to cuckoo-ca-choo. Okay. Well, so. Trump, okay? I don't know what the hell, what do we say? Trump, all right? But let's go on. We have more lies, and we're going to talk about them. Let me see. I don't know what's next. Let's see. Here we go. Now, I want to save that. No, I want to save that one, too. Okay, we'll do this one.
Nursing home wants to transfer to the comfort. Yeah, except the comfort is a federal facility. It doesn't take transfers from nursing homes. It only takes transfers from hospitals. That's why the comfort wouldn't take a transfer from a nursing home.
That's a lie.
Because the specific protocol on that specific ship said the people have to come from a hospital because when they come from a hospital, the hospital does the full work.
Okay, look. USS Comfort, United States Naval Hospital Ship, USS Comfort, sat in New York Harbor for months. It could treat 1,000 people at any given time. It treated barely 100 in that period. Now, he's telling you that they couldn't take these people out of the nursing homes where it was a hotbed of this disease and put them on comfort to be transferred. Well, because, you know, the paperwork between the nursing home and the hospitals and the people and the lady ran there and they came and it was not in the ambulance. No, that's horseshit. He could have picked up the phone if that was the case. And I would submit to you that probably somewhere in the bureaucracy of the New York Board of Health in terms of those protocols, maybe. But what was to stop Andy from picking up the phone? Give me the White House. Don, Andy. Listen, we got a problem, blah, blah, blah. Don says, well, Andy, you're a tool and I hate your guts and you're a lousy leader, a very terrible leader, maybe the worst leader. It's a terrible leader, but we're going to do what we can to help you and make you look good because that's what I do and it'll make me look even better. And Andy would have been solved. This problem would have been solved. Yeah, there would have been a little bit of jawbone and back and forth. So what? But this problem would have been solved. So that's a lie. So that allowed him to keep these people in the nursing homes.
There is a call for a federal probe into how the state handled the nursing home situation, specifically the March executive order allowing COVID-positive patients back.
This is the one I read to you.
In reflecting on comments, I was wondering, why was that executive order made at the time?
Yeah, you should tell your... Look, this is a political season. I get it. I have refrained.
Well, just give us the reasons.
I'm not going to get into the political back and forth. But
you don't have to. Just give us the reason.
Wants to ask why did the state do that with COVID patients in nursing home? It's because the state followed President Trump's CDC guidance. So they should ask President Trump.
Lie.
I think that will stop.
So, in a very short amount of time after this directive, the truth was coming out. And the numbers, even though they had been tamped down, okay, they had been artificially suppressed, shall we say. It was still a tremendous number. It was larger than any other state. If you guys have been listening to this show any time at all, you know what I've talked about in this last year. And you know how much I hate this guy. Our grandparents, our aunts and uncles, our moms and dads. That's who he killed. With that March 25th order. So in the ensuing months, as this comes to light and we find out these unbelievably staggeringly high numbers, and not only New York, Phil Murphy in New Jersey. Phil Murphy in New Jersey, Tom Wolf in Ohio, Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, Gavin Newsom in Colorado, Northam in Virginia, and probably one or two. Pritzker in Illinois and Boss Hogg out there in Colorado, I don't know what is it. Okay, they all enacted these policies, and it led to the deaths of tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 or more, all across the country in these Democrat-held enclaves that used these policies, that implemented these policies. Here's what he said.
Look, we have to be able to say we did everything we can. Right?
To kill them.
We have to look at that death number every day. 166 people died. The only way you put your head on the pillow at night is you say, I did everything I could.
I wish I could have killed more, but we did all we could.
They had the best doctors. They had ventilators. They had the best treatment.
With warehouses full of ventilators never used.
Up until today, as I am before you, I can look you in the eyes and say, we did everything that we could. As a society. You can't save everyone. You're going to lose people. That's life. That's somebody else's.
Looks like about 13,000 of them now, Andy.
But we did everything we could. I want to make sure the same is true until this is over. We did everything we could. And testing staff twice a week, yes, it's onerous, and I understand it's a pain.
Oh, shut up.
But we have to do everything.
Shut up. I've got two more clips I'm going to play for you. And again, keep in mind everything we've heard, and keep in mind this directive, more important than anything else. I know it's clip heavy. We're intense with it. I played a bunch of them, which are kind of short. And again, better you hear it from this dude than me half-assed paraphrasing. You guys know that. Last two coming up. Here we are.
Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. That is a fact.
Jesus.
It's a fact that he admitted, and the CDC admitted, and Fauci admitted. The China virus. It was not the China virus.
It was the European virus that came to New York. They missed it.
They came from China, you fool.
They missed it. The China virus went to Europe. It got on a plane. It went to Europe.
God.
They never even thought of the possibility. And then 3 million Europeans got on the plane
and
came to New York. And they brought the virus. January, they brought the virus. February, they brought the virus. March, they brought the virus. And in mid-March, the federal government does a travel ban from Europe. Mid-March, too little, too late.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay, look. So now all this stuff has finally come back. And it's come back to bite him. And it's coming back huge. About 3 weeks ago, maybe less, New York State Attorney General Letitia James started looking into this. Now, she too is a Democrat who, if I had to guess, is looking at running for governor of New York in a few years. And so she looked into this. Now, she's not really altogether that credible. She kind of looks for like sensationalistic cases that are kind of splashy and going to, you know, put her name out there. So, but this was legitimate. I mean, you know, a stopped clock is right twice a day, and even a blind dog can find a bone and whatever other rural homily you want to use. But you know, she's on to something. And she knows she's on to something. And so they started this. And then we really knew she was on to something when the Cuomo administration would not, yeah, they wouldn't give her the information. They wanted the Board of Health to release the number of deaths that the state had so they could look at it, and the administration would not. Now, New York Post, a couple days ago, had an article concerning Governor Cuomo's top aide. And that woman's name is Melissa DeRosa. And in a conference call with New York Democrat lawmakers, she apologized to them for withholding the state nursing home's death toll from COVID-19, telling them, quote, "We froze out of fear that the true numbers would be used against us by federal prosecutors." What? We froze. We froze. In other words, we were afraid the Justice Department was going to place us under arrest. This stunning admission of a cover-up was made by Secretary to the Governor Melissa DeRosa during a video conference call with state Democratic leaders in which she said the Cuomo administration had rebuffed a legislative request for the tally in August because right around the same time, then-President Donald Trump turns this into a giant political football, according to an audio recording of the two-hour-plus meeting. He starts tweeting that we killed everyone in nursing homes. Well, you did. He starts going after New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. He did. Starts going after Governor of California, Gavin Newsom. He did. Starts going after Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. She did. So in addition to attacking Cuomo's fellow Democratic governors, DeRosa said, Trump directs the Department of Justice to do an investigation into us. And basically, we froze, she told the lawmakers on this call. Governor Andrew Cuomo dismissed the matter of where the nursing home fatalities actually took place. Because then we were in a position where we weren't sure if what we were going to give the Department of Justice or what we were going to give to you guys, what we start saying, what was going to be used against us, while we weren't sure if there was going to be an investigation. That played a very large role into this.
A third of all deaths in this nation are from nursing homes. New York State, we're only about 28% only. But we're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes.
Really?
Who cares? 33,
no,
28
care,
died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died.
Yeah, we know. You killed them. You son of a bitch. Mother of pearl, man. So after dropping this bombshell, DeRosa asked for a little bit of appreciation of the context and offered what appears to be the Cuomo administration's first apology for its handling of the nursing homes amid the pandemic. I had to stop for a minute, okay? So let me go ahead and set the scene here. Last July, New York legislators who smelled a rat asked to see this information, this tally of information concerning nursing home deaths in the state of New York. Well, about that time, President Trump, along with the rest of us who were paying attention, are looking at this. I've been screaming bloody murder about what New York and these states have been doing since they started doing it. Go back to any of my programs that are in the archive. These people were killed because Andrew Cuomo hated Donald Trump and spurned his assistance. And it's going to be the same in New York, the same in California, Ohio, New Jersey, Michigan, Colorado, Illinois, any place where you have these nursing home deaths, because they all followed the same protocols. They all fundamentally did the same thing. And it was a slap in the face of the Trump administration when they would offer assistance. They would rather let these people die. And by God, they did. By the thousands. And now that we're finding out, due to the investigation that Attorney General Letitia James is engaged in, the numbers were suppressed. The numbers were suppressed by as much as 56, almost 60%. So instead of the 10,000 that they lied about and tried to cover up and make it look as though it were 8, instead of that 10,000 to 11,000, the actual figure is going to be more like 14. Maybe 15. We may never know. So then we fast forward to this meeting that his executive secretary, Melissa DeRosa, is at. She's explaining the circumstances of why they did what they did and the reason they did what they did and refused these lawmakers' requests for these numbers because they were afraid they might be arrested and put in jail. And they couldn't have that evidence out there, or at least that easily assessed. So instead of trying to explain their situation and explaining themselves and apologizing and owning this crime against humanity. And no, that's not drama. No, that's not an exaggeration. That's by damn what it is, a crime against humanity in every one of the states that adhere to these principles. But instead of apologizing to the family members, to the grandsons and granddaughters, to the daughters, to the nieces and nephews, to the kid brothers and sisters, Mr. Rosa tries to make amends with the fellow Democrats for the political inconvenience that it has caused them. So we do apologize, she said. I do understand the position that you were put in, and I know that that's not fair. It was not our intention to put you in that political position with the Republicans. No, I'm not making it up. That's by God what she said to answer for more than 13,000 to 15,000 senior citizens in New York dead in the nursing homes. They died alone. No Christmases, no Easters, no 4th of Julys, no birthdays, no anniversaries, no grandsons, no kids, no friends, nobody. They died alone. heartbroken, frightened. Assembly Health Committee Chairman Richard Gottfried immediately rejected DeRosa's expression of remorse. "I don't have enough time today to explain all the reasons why I don't give that any credit at all," said Gottfried, one of the lawmakers who had demanded the death toll data back in August. State Senate Aging Committee Chairwoman Rachel May, who was battered during her reelection bid last year over the issue of the nursing home deaths, also ripped into DeRosa, saying her former opponent had launched another broadside just that day. "And the issue for me," she said, "the biggest issue of all is feeling like I needed to defend, or at least not attack, an administration that was appearing to be covering something up. And in a pandemic, when you want the public to trust the public health officials, and there is this clear feeling that they're not coming, you know, being forthcoming with you, that's really hard. It remains difficult."
A third of all deaths in this nation are from nursing homes. New York State, we're only about 28% only, but we're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes. But who cares? 33, 28 died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died.
Yeah, Andy, they died. You killed them. And all your governor pals, Murphy, Wolf, Whitmer, Northam, Newsom, Pritzker. Now take what happened in New York, folks. Take what happened in New York, and I can guarantee you that you're going to find that every other single Democrat governor who implemented these policies likewise suppressed their death toll figures. It moved the number of deaths in New York here's how it worked. As of January 19th, which was not that long ago, it was 12,743. Now, the day before that, January 18th, the Department of Health was only publicly acknowledging 8,700 deaths. It jumped to 12,743. Then they finally, when the truth came out and they looked at all of everywhere, whether it was a nursing home, whether it was in a hospital or assisted living, if they came from a nursing home, or they passed in a nursing home, they finally counted all those up, 15,049, when you factor in everything. Now, let's just say that every other Democrat state that followed these policies likewise suppressed their death toll figures by a similar amount. It's not a crime against humanity. Are you sure? Last time I checked, every one of those senior citizens that died in a nursing home was human. And to have that large a section, similar humans, comprising a segment of humanity that have had crimes committed against them. Yeah, crimes against humanity. I know we think Hitler, we think Pol Pot, we think Idi Amin Dada, we think Mao Zedong, we think Stalin, we think Castro, sure, we do, and we should. because those people were guilty of crimes against humanity. But you know what? You can think Whitmer. You can think Cuomo. You can think Wolf. You can think Murphy. You can think Northam. You can think Pritzker. You can think Newsom. You can think those people too. You don't think those people weren't any goddamn disregarding of human life, that they weren't any less callous than Pol Pot? You think they were any less unfeeling than Idi Amin? These people don't care. The Department of Justice has dropped any investigation. Cuomo's not worried about going to jail now, but he was. And why would he be worried about going to jail if he hadn't done something wrong? I don't know. Say killing 15,000 New Yorkers. That's three times what we lost on 9/11 or at Pearl Harbor. And that's just New York State alone. This thing could go into the hundreds of thousands of senior citizens who were done this way and left to die. Yeah, I'm a little bit in the flesh about it. You ought to be too. Not dead air. I'm still here. I'm just thinking about this. I didn't realize I had such an impressive portfolio against this dude. I must have really got. But, you know, and it just is. It's. Tell me this isn't a crime. I mean, it's almost like a genocide. Geriatricide. Geronticide. On a massive scale of extermination. Tell me where I'm wrong. Show me where I'm being dramatic. Show me where that didn't happen. Show me where it wasn't contrived to happen. Show me where it wasn't engineered to happen. I read you that directive, and I read it word for word. And I'll bet if we look, we'll find similar directives buried within the bureaucracy of communications between all these other state boards of health and their nursing homes and hospitals and admissions directors. You think this was an anomaly? You think it was just New York? We already know the same thing happened in Jersey. We know what happened in Ohio. It happened in all these different places. And people need to start looking. That's about all the time we've got for this evening. I want to thank you guys for being here with us tonight. Kind of a special evening. We were talking about the acquittal, and then I kind of got wound up on this dude here. Thanks so much, those of you. And again, I want to tell you guys, Patriot Nation Radio is taking off. I mean, we've got a terrific program with Gary Binford and United Patriots Uprising. We've got the handsome one himself, Mark Hoffman, with Patriot Nation Radio on Thursday nights. I do a couple of things live, usually Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tonight was, you know, how it is when you don't have anything else to do. So that's what I did this evening. And I was happy to be here, and I thank you for the opportunity. But what I'm saying, our listenership has doubled since the election, since the silencing of major conservatives you know, and a rejection of what they're seeing on the establishment news networks, stuff like us, stuff like Mark, stuff like Gary, stuff like Don Newman and Donna Fiducia, Cowboy Logic, it's starting to take off. And we're getting more listeners all the time, and I want to thank you very, very much for that. Tell your friends, spread the word, okay? I know there are places where you find, you know, that I've planted this thing on social media, but you probably have a lot of places that I don't know about. By all means, do please share any of the stuff that we put out there. You know, for my program here with ACP, for Patriot Nation Radio Live, for United Patriots Uprising, spread the word. We're becoming something, and you know, we're doing our part, and I know you guys are doing your part. Let's just spread it around a little bit more. That's all the time we've got. Thank you very much. You know the usual haunts to check out in terms of what's going on. Mojo 50 Radio. That's the recorded version of the program. Mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be. The very best libertarian conservative talk radio out there. Mojo50.com. You guys take good care. Thank you so much for listening. God bless you. God bless America. We'll be back Tuesday. Well, I'll be doing this again tomorrow for the recorded version of the program. But we'll be back Tuesday, Lord willing, and the river don't rise, which we run a substantial risk of actually having. Taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. We'll see you guys then. Y'all take care.